Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp, part of the District of Wonders Network, featuring Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, and Crime City Central. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
This is Protecting Project Pulp, episode 36. I'm your host, Simon Hildebrandt. Welcome to the show. This week we bring you The Crawling Creature by Donald Bain Hobart, narrated by Jeff Lewis. Regarding our author, sadly, as with so many writers who labored in the narrative minds of the pulps, we know very little about Donald Bain Hobart. Rumored to have lived from roughly 1898 to 1970, he has a number of stories attributed to him, including Auction of the Damned in Thrilling Mystery magazine, and The Torture Winch, Snatch Car, and One for the Books in Munsey's magazine. His novels include The Cell Murder Mystery, published in 1931, and a Western novel called Ambush at Big Creek Bridge. Instead of anonymity, our narrator Jeff Lewis describes himself as suffering from bibliophiliism, for which he has no intention of seeking treatment. When not reading or collecting books, he works for a huge semiconductor manufacturer in the area of mathematical modeling and simulation. Before being lured into the corporate world, he worked for the National Optical Astronomy Observatories and the Kitt Peak Observatory, spending years messing up his circadian rhythms. Jeff's free time is spent reading, writing, collecting and consuming wine, travelling, and bothering the four cats that share his house. His tolerant and understanding wife works as a lawyer and spends a great deal of time pulling him into debates that he has no chance of winning. So remember, you never know what's watching from the bushes. Here's The Crawling Creature by Donald Bain Hobart, narrated by Jeff Lewis.
Air swung around tensely. The heavy rifle he held in his hands was ready as he gazed back. His eyes searched the dense undergrowth that lined the faint trail through the jungle. The low, overhanging branches of the trees made it dark and shadowy despite the hot sun overhead. It was hard to see for any distance. 20 feet away, sections of the brush were merely black splotches just beyond the reach of the sunlight. For the past hour, he was almost certain he was being followed. He had expected that he would be ever since he had returned back to the camp that he and Dan Buckley had made during the previous night. Finding Dan that way had been horrible. Dick Sayers did not like to think about it. Yet it was hard to forget his friend lying there just at the edge of the little clearing, his head smashed like an egg, and those two ghastly X's drawn on his cheeks in his own blood. Eris was sure that it had not been done by the natives. They were not very friendly towards what few white men ventured into this part of the African brush, but still they were comparatively peaceful. No, it had not been the natives. Eris was sure of that. It was something far more sinister. Something which even the blacks themselves feared. And that was the crawling creature. The crawling creature. No one knew just what it really was. For those few who had seen it had died just as Dan Buckley, murdered by that one powerful blow that cracked open their heads. It might be human, and then again it might be some unusual species of huge ape. The natives, those few that Eris had found willing to talk about it at all, seemed to believe it was some sort of strange beast that had spread a wave of terror over the jungle. Eris did not believe the crawling creature was an animal. Not since he had seen those crimson marks on Buckley's cheeks. They had been left there deliberately. The brand of the killer. Even the highest degree of intelligence that an ape might possess would not make him capable of that. Eris was convinced this crawling creature was a fiend in human form, possibly a native, or even a demented white man. The way the money belt that Dan Buckley had been wearing had been torn from his lifeless body indicated that. The $5,000 that Dan had been carrying just as Eris was now had been missing. Someone had learned they were carrying enough cash to buy an interest in that diamond mine in South Africa that their old friend Ed Gordon had written them about. Ares bitterly regretted that Dan and he had discussed the matter so freely in that little dive in the coast town near the mouth of the Congo. News traveled fast at times, and two men going alone into the brush and carrying $10,000 in cash between them was tempting bait for the human jackals of that part of the country. From the first, the two men had felt they were being trailed. It had been an unusual noise in the brush that had drawn Ayers away from camp the previous night. He never discovered what had made it, but during his absence, the crawling creature had found the opportunity to get Dan Buckley and half the wealth the two men possessed. This morning, after having buried Dan the best he could, Ayers had continued, heading south through the jungle and across the veldt, hoping to reach Ed Gordon in safety before the thing that lurked in the jungle got him also. Now he found that someone was following, and he had been sure of it for the past hour, and he believed that that someone or something was the crawling creature. Ayers searched the brush with his eyes, found that he could see nothing, turned and started once more along the trail. He was very much alert. He had grimly made up his mind that whatever or whoever it was that had killed his partner would not get him in the same way. He halted suddenly, the powerful big game rifle in his hands half raised as he heard a crackling in the undergrowth ahead. A man stepped into view, and Dick's Ayers stood staring at him in amazement. The man was a huge creature, fully 6 feet 7 inches tall, and must have weighed close to 300 pounds. A grimy pith helmet rested on top of the bushy head of flaming red hair. His clothing was torn and ragged, and he held a heavy rifle in one ham-like hand. There was a belt with an automatic and a holster strapped around his waist. "Looks like I got company," he said as he stood gazing at Ayers. "This sure is a pleasant surprise." Ayers did not speak, but his lean, tall frame was ready for instant action as he stood staring at the other man. The latter appeared big and powerful enough to be that mysterious killer, the crawling creature, who crushed men's heads with one mighty blow. Ayers was not taking any chances. "What's the idea?" demanded the big man with a grin. "You one of them fellers that figure we ain't been properly introduced? We're both white men, ain't we?" "There ain't no reason to be so damn high hat, mister." Ayers realized the big man was American, just as he was. "Who are you?" he asked slowly. "Most people calls me Lucky McNally," answered the big man. "You ain't trusting me for some reason. I can see that. But you're all wrong. I've been watching you from the brush up ahead there for the past 5 minutes. I could have plugged you easy if I'd wanted, but I didn't. Me? I'm a right friendly guy. Unless somebody gets me kind of perturbed." "Lucky McNally, eh?" said Ayers. He had heard the name before. McNally bore a reputation in this part of Africa of being a fighting two-fisted adventurer, a trader of sorts who traveled the jungle trails alone, bartering with the natives for ivory and anything else that they might possess that he deemed of value. Men spoke of Lucky McNally with admiration and respect. It seemed hardly possible that this man could actually be the crawling creature. And yet Ayers was not sure. He thought swiftly, and decided that his attitude toward McNally would be friendly but watchful. He had not forgotten Dan Buckley, and he was not taking any chances. "My name is Ayers. Dixon Ayers," he said slowly. "I have to be careful." "Why?" demanded McNally, his eyes fixed upon Ayers' lean, tanned face. "What's wrong?" "Something or somebody killed my partner last night," Ayers answered. "Broke his skull with one blow." "No wonder you're kind of cautious," said the big man. "One blow, huh?" His laugh was booming. "Friendly." "Sure. I know what you're thinking, Ayers. I look big and husky enough to have done it. But I didn't. Nobody ever said that Lucky McNally minded a good fight, but they ain't saying I'm a killer either." "I'm beginning to believe you," said Ayers. "I've heard of you before, and you don't look to me like you might be." He hesitated, deliberately waiting to see if McNally would finish the sentence for him. "Sure, I know. You don't believe I'm this crawling creature." "You're right, Ayers. I ain't." "But but when I was watching you a few minutes ago, I seen something duck back into the jungle when you turned around and kind of half crawled away. McNally frowned, and ever since I've been wondering. I thought someone was following me, said Ayers. There was, said McNally, and I got a hunch it's this crawling whatever it is. Ayers nodded. He was still suspicious. If McNally really was the killer, and Ayers was not certain that he was not, then he was being very clever now. Saying that he was actually seeing something back along the trail, making it seem that the crawling creature was still lurking somewhere in the brush nearby. Look, said McNally, suddenly gazing over Ayers' shoulder. There's something moving back there. Dick Ayers was no fool. He did not swing around with his back to the other man. That would make it far too easy for McNally if he did happen to be the murderer. Ayers moved forward swiftly, stepped by McNally well out of the big man's reach, and then swung around. He was standing behind McNally and a little to one side, the heavy rifle in his hands, ready. Far back in the shadows along the trail, he saw something moving. Both he and McNally raised their guns to their shoulders in the same instant, and the roar of Ayers Jeffrey seemed like an echo of the big man's .57 Express rifle. Missed, said McNally, lowering his weapon. Too dark back there beneath them trees. He swung around so that he faced Ayers. You got a lot of sense, he said. I'll hand you that, for not turning your back on a guy you ain't sure of. If I was in your place, I'd done the same thing. I haven't forgotten what happened to my partner last night, said Ayers grimly. I'll believe you're not this crawling creature when we get it, McNally. Fair enough, said the big man. Only tell me one thing. Why was your partner killed? Ayers hesitated an instant before he answered. This McNally was a hard-boiled adventurer. If he knew that the man he now talked to was carrying $5,000 and a money belt around his waist, it might prove a temptation, even though he's not actually the crawling creature. Because my partner was carrying all the money we owned, said Ayers slowly. $5,000 that we were going to use to buy a share in a diamond mine with. $5,000, eh? In cash? Yes, and was missing from poor Dan Buckley's money belt when I found him dead. Dan Buckley? That was my partner's name. Hell's hinges, exclaimed McNally excitedly. Was this Buckley a little wiry guy, sandy hair, with a scar over his right eyebrow? That's Dan, all right. Why? Because I know him. Me and Dan used to be friends when he was in Mexico about 5 years ago. McNally scowled evilly as he gazed at the jungle that surrounded them. And this crawling creature got him. The rotten offspring of a so-and-so. Listen, Ayers, I'm going to get this what is it if it's the last thing I do. Dan Buckley pulled me out of some tough spots, and I'm gunning for his murderer from now on. So am I, said Ayers calmly. That's one reason why I started along the trail this morning. I thought he or it would follow me. Might give me a chance to get a shot in where it would do the most good. The other reason was that I wanted to get back out to the coast and get a boat down to Cape Town, where I've got a friend waiting to learn what became of Dan and myself. I get you. This friend was figuring on giving you and Dan an in on the diamond mine. Ain't that it? Just about, Ayers nodded. And then don't be foolish, said McNally. You don't want to leave this jungle until you get your $5,000 back and we get this crawling creature. Yes, I know, said Ayers. But I'd like to know just what this murderer is, whether it's a man or a beast. A thought struck him, and he swiftly told McNally about the two X's that had been drawn on Buckley's cheeks with the murdered man's blood. Huh? Said the big man as he listened. Sounds to me like this creature whose is a man. And a crazy one at that. I'm figuring that no guy in his right mind is going to pull a trick like that. That's the way I feel about it, said Ayers. Now that he knew that McNally was a friend of Buckley's, he was beginning to have a bit more faith in the big man. He did not trust him entirely, for it might be a trick, this claim of friendship upon McNally's part. The man who had killed Dan had seen his face, would doubtlessly be able to remember it clearly enough to describe it as Lucky McNally had done, and Ayers did not remember Buckley ever having mentioned that he had known McNally. That in itself did not prove very much, for Dan had never been inclined to be overly talkative regarding his life in the years before Ayers had known him. What McNally said about having known Buckley in Mexico might be true, and then again it might not. But the way things stood at the present, Ayres was willing to give McNally the benefit of the doubt. "It ain't a native trick either," said McNally, as though half thinking aloud. "It might be." He broke off abruptly and shook his massive head. "No, if I told you that, you'd think I'm a nutty myself." "What do you mean?" Ayres looked at McNally curiously. "Never mind," said the big man, starting back along the trail. "Come on. I got a hunch this killer ain't got any gun. If he had, he would have taken a shot at us both long before this." He paused suddenly and turned to Ayres as though a thought struck him. "Say, what did you do with Buckley's gun?" "He had one, didn't he?" "Of course," Ayres answered. "I buried it with him." "That was bright," said the big man, again moving back along the trail. "I'll bet you find the grave dug up when we get back to it." "You mean you think this crawling creature will want that gun?" "Sure he will. Didn't we just both take a shot at him?" "Well, if he knows we're both after him, he's going to want to be armed and ready for trouble." McNally smiled as he glanced over his shoulder at Ayres as the latter walked close behind him. "I've seen a lot of tough bozos in my time, and the reason I'm still alive and kicking was because I'm always willing to figure they've got as much brains as I have. This crawling creature may be crazy, but he ain't dumb." They went on back through the jungle, following the trail that had evidently been made by the natives, for it was too narrow to have been an elephant spoor. They had ceased talking, and their faces were hard and grim, the set expressions of their countenances boded ill for the creature, be it man or beast, that lurked somewhere amid the brush. Heat rose in waves from the vegetation all about them. There was no sound save for the crackling of the twigs and leaves beneath their feet. Constantly their gaze searched the shadows, peering into the dark places beneath the trees, ever on the alert for some indication of the presence of the crawling creature. But nothing moved. As they passed beneath the low overhanging branches of a big tree, Ayres, who had been walking a few paces behind McNally, brushed against what appeared to be a bit of green vine. It snapped up into the air and then dropped over his head and tightened suddenly, drawing him back and pulling him half off his feet. He uttered a hoarse cry, and McNally wheeled abruptly, the rifle in his hands ready. The big man cursed as he saw Ayres swinging in the air, hanging by a rope made of a vine that was tight around his throat. McNally fired as he saw a shadowy object make a flying leap from the tree above, land in the brush with a crash, and then disappear. The big man did not wait to see if his shot had hit the mark. He could tell Ayres was strangling. McNally leaped up and caught the vine in his huge fist just above Ayres' head. The combined weight was too much and the vine broke, dropping both men to the ground. Ayres tore at the noose that was still around his neck as he lay there. It came away, and he gasped for breath. "That was close," murmured McNally as he got to his feet. "Too damn close. If you hadn't yelled, I might not have known what was happening until it was too late." "I know," said Ayres weakly, rising and picking up his gun. "Did you get him when you fired?" "Afraid not," said McNally. "What a jump that was." There was a scowl on his big face as he gazed up at the tree. "I said it wasn't a native, but I ain't so sure of it now. That vine trick, it's one that a black might think of doing. And if it was a white man, he sure knows how to jump." They both stood listening. Far off to their left, they heard a faint rustling in the jungle. It gradually faded into the silence. "Got away all right," said McNally. "I guess I missed him." He smiled ironically. "Reckon you figured I'm a rotten shot. That's the second time I've missed." "So did I. Once," remarked Ayres. "Evidently, he hasn't dug up that gun yet, if he really is going to do it at all. How far are we from where you and Buckley camped last night now?" Ayres looked around him. "About a mile, I guess. Maybe less." "Come on, then," said McNally as he started out again. "Come on, then," said McNally, starting ahead again. "He's got a head start. He'll get there first." They went on. Dix Ayres was very careful to avoid anything along the trail. His neck still ached from the vine rope. He no longer had any suspicions regarding Lucky McNally. The attempt to hang him with the vine had convinced him that the crawling creature was actually someone else. There was not the slightest doubt of that. They reached the clearing which Ayres and Buckley had camped the previous night without encountering any further trouble. Ayres led the big man to the shallow grave he had dug for Buckley. "Look," exclaimed Ayres as he reached it, "you were right." The grave had been dug up, and the heavy rifle that had been lying beside Buckley's body was missing. "The guy sure moves fast," said McNally. "He got here first, all right. The gun is gone." Ayres was not looking at the grave. His eyes were fixed upon the back of McNally's huge hand. There was a black streak on it that might have been dried blood. But that was impossible. McNally wasn't the mysterious killer. That was the individual who had been ghoulish enough to rob Buckley's grave, to steal the gun of a dead man. There was one thing about the gun that Ayres had not told McNally. The rifle was not loaded. Ayres had removed the cartridges and put them in his own pockets. He had been intended to tell the big man that, but now that he decided against it, he did not have any particular reason for not doing so, save the faint and probable suspicion that had just entered his mind. He realized that his suspecting the other man was hardly fair. Lucky McNally had rescued him when he had been caught in the jungle by the vine rope in the hands of someone who obviously intended to hang him. If McNally was the real killer, he certainly would not have done that. At least it did not seem very probable to Ayres. "Looks kind of bad," said McNally, gazing around him anxiously. "If this crawling creature has the gun, and we know he has, then we're in for a tough spot, Ayres." "We are," said Ayres, watching the other man closely. "What are you going to do about it?" "Try and get him first," said the big man. "Listen, I got a hunch this guy's somewhere around here. Suppose we separate and see if we can dig him out, huh?" "All right," said Ayres. "That might be a good idea." "It's a swell one," said McNally. "You go that way," he pointed to the jungle towards the south, "and I'll go this," he nodded towards the west. "Circle back and we'll meet here in about an hour. We ought to have some trace of the killer by then." Ayres stood watching as the big man moved across the clearing and entered the brush. He stood with his eyes fixed upon McNally's back as the latter disappeared. Then suddenly Ayres turned and started running towards a big tree. He ducked behind it swiftly and remained hidden from view. His move was instinctive. He did not quite know why he had done it, but it felt there was some reason. McNally's having brought him all the way back to this camping spot did not seem as logical as it had at first. Yet it seemed sensible, this effort to keep Buckley's gun from the crawling creature. Was it, though? Ayres wasn't so sure of that now. He realized that it was not, knowing as he did that the gun was empty. But he had not told Lucky McNally that. Lucky McNally. Dimly Ayres tried to remember something that he'd heard about that name. There had been some ironical reason for McNally having been given that nickname. He had heard men who knew McNally well laugh over it, but he could not quite remember what it had been. Ayres turned and started into the jungle. He might as well do as McNally had suggested and look for the man who had murdered his partner. He did not think the search would prove particularly fruitful. If the crawling creature was clever enough to escape as easily as he had done from the tree back along the trail, he was not likely to be found readily if he chose to hide. For over half an hour, Ayres circled through the jungle, searching for some trace of the hidden killer. Once he heard a rustling amid the brush, but discovered it was merely some sort of small wild animal. He was not interested in game at the moment. He had more important things on his mind. Finally, he returned to the clearing. McNally had not as yet returned. Ayres went to Buckley's grave. He stood frowning as he gazed at it. It had been filled in again, and upon the soft dirt that covered it had been drawn two large X's. The mark of the crawling creature. Ayres swung around as he heard the roar of a heavy rifle and a bullet thudded into a tree trunk just above his head. There was a crashing back in the brush and then a second report of a gun. This time the bullet did not appear to be aimed in Ayres' direction. It would not have hit him anyway. For an instant after the first shot had struck, he ducked down behind the tree. In a moment, Lucky McNally came running out of the jungle. Ayres had him covered from behind the tree. He was taking no chances with anyone. Either McNally or the other man had fired those two shots, nearly got him with the first one, and as far as Ayres knew, the hidden killer's gun was not loaded. "Ayres," called McNally, "where are you? Right here, said Ayers from behind the tree, and I've got you covered, McNally. Covered, exclaimed the big man as he came closer. What the hell for? Just playing safe, said Ayers. You better stay right where you are. Of all the fool idiots, exclaimed McNally, you're it. Here this crawling creature takes a shot at you. I fire back at him, and instead of you being thankful, like you should be, that I'm protecting you, you cover me with your gun. Are you nuts or something, Ayers? Buckley's gun wasn't loaded, said Ayers. I forgot to tell you that. McNally stared at him for a moment, and then threw back his big head and laughed loudly. What of it? He demanded finally. Didn't Buckley have a lot of cartridges in his pockets, like we all carry them at times? I got a hunch he did. Ayers began to feel rather foolish. The big man was right. Buckley ought to have a handful of cartridges in his coat pocket. Ayers remembered that was possible. You sure are dumb, said McNally with a shake of his head. Do you think this crawling creature would go to all the trouble of digging up a grave in order to get a gun and not make sure it was loaded? You know damn well he wouldn't. I guess you're right, said Ayers as he stepped out from behind the tree, the rifle lowered. My error, McNally. Forget it, said the big man. I think we winged the killer, but I ain't sure. McNally glanced around and then stood staring as he saw the filled grave. What the? He exclaimed, striding closer. Who done this? The crawling creature, said Ayers. At least those X's seem to be his mark. This man is insane, there's no doubt about it. Oh, no, he isn't, said McNally. He's just smart, that's all. He knows those marks are going to worry us, and he's right. I don't agree with you, stated Ayers. Tricks like this are merely childish, that's all, and products of a demented mind. I tell you, the man's a homicidal maniac. That's what you think, McNally glared at him, but I got a hunch you're all wrong. All right, said Ayers. We won't argue about it. It was growing late in the afternoon. Ayers dreaded another night in the jungle. It had been dark when the crawling creature had murdered Buckley, and when the sun disappeared, he might strike again. I'm going to take one more look around, said McNally suddenly. You stay here. Ayers glanced at the big man as the latter spoke. McNally was scowling, and he seemed to have something on his mind. He walked around hurriedly and disappeared into the jungle. Ayers seated himself at the base of a big tree. He could watch all sides of the clearing, save in back of him from where he sat. He had not been there long when he began to have the uncanny sensation that someone was watching him. He looked around anxiously, peering into the undergrowth that surrounded the clearing, but he could see no one. That fact proved nothing. He still felt someone was gazing at him. He was sure that the hidden watcher expected him to do something, was observing him for that reason. But what was expected of him? Ayers suddenly remembered something he had been trying to recall for the past half hour. As he did so, a number of things that had puzzled him began to grow clearer in his mind. The solution to the mystery of the crawling creature was beginning to take shape in his brain. It seemed impossibly fantastic, and yet, the more he thought about it, the more illogical it seemed. He got to his feet slowly, looked about him as though he half feared he might be watched. He knew that he was actually being observed closely, but he was playing a part now. Again he glanced around. He appeared to be satisfied he was quite alone in the clearing. He went to the tree where he had been sitting, leaned over as if he were about to pick up something. Don't, you fool, whispered a voice from the shadows of the jungle nearby. That's what he's waiting for, to find out where you've hidden it. That's what I thought, said Ayers calmly. He stood up quickly, shook his head as though puzzled about something, and then moved to another tree and leaned over as he had done before. Again, he did not appear satisfied. He went to a third tree. Then suddenly swung around, the heavy rifle in his hands half raised. He looked all about him anxiously, then shook his head and seated himself against the trunk of a tree, the rifle across his knees. 15 minutes later, he was still sitting there as Lucky McNally appeared out of the brush. Ayers was idly tossing small objects into the brush at his left. As he finished doing so, he heard a very faint rustling coming from that direction and smiled faintly. Not a trace of that guy, said McNally as he reached Ayers. I'm still figuring he's somewhere out there, though. Got one of those hunches of yours about it? Asked Ayers casually. Yes, the big man nodded, and I've never gone wrong with one of my hunches yet. He looked at Ayers. Know what I think? No, Ayers shook his head. What? That this crawling creature is watching us for some reason. So do I, said Ayers. Huh? McNally looked at him in surprise. Why do you think so? Same reason you do. At least I believe it is. Might be more sure if I knew your reason exactly. I ain't telling you that yet, said McNally. He yawned and dropped down on the ground a short distance from Ayers. Want to see if you can figure it out for yourself? I see you carry an automatic, Ayers said casually. What is it? .45 caliber? Yes, McNally nodded. Wonder how the killer ever got the name the Crawling Creature, remarked Ayers. Sounds weird. Well, I heard the natives talk about him, said McNally, and they say he kind of creeps up on his man and busts his head in. And that's what he did to poor Buckley, all right, said Ayers bitterly. I wish we could get him. I owe that to Dan. So did I, remarked McNally. I told you that before. Told you I was good friends with Buckley down in Mexico 10 years ago. Yes, I know, Ayers nodded. Only you said 5 years ago the last time. Not that it matters. Nah, I forget dates easily, said McNally. McNally glanced about him. It's getting dark. A thought struck him. Say, didn't you and Buckley have camping stuff? Of course, said Ayers. I hid it in the brush when I broke camp this morning. Didn't want to be bothered with it. I was after the crawling creature, and I wanted to travel light. That's a good one, McNally laughed. When I first seen you, you were beating it away from this part of the jungle like all hell was after you. I told you that because I hoped the killer might follow me. Sure you did. But I got a hunch that you were wrong. That you were lying. McNally's tone changed suddenly. I've been playing with you long enough, Ayers. Where is it? Where's what? Asked Ayers, apparently unconsciously turning so that the muzzle of the rifle across his knees covered the big man. I don't understand. Oh, yes, you do, the big man's voice was heard. I mean the other $5,000. You hid it somewhere. I want to know where. So that's it, exclaimed Ayers. McNally moved with lightning speed. He flung himself at the other man. A heavy hand clasped Ayers by the throat and dragged him to his feet, held him. With his left hand, McNally reached for the automatic in the holster at his belt. Tell me where you hid the money, he growled, or I'll give you the same thing I gave Buckley. Dix Ayers saw death staring at him from those glittering eyes and the big, distorted face that gazed into his. He knew that any moment the automatic might crash down upon his head, cracking his skull. I'll tell you, he gasped. It's... From the jungle behind McNally there came the roar of a rifle. A bullet plowed into the big man's shoulder, spun him half around. He released Ayers and turned swiftly, the automatic in his hand. As the automatic barked rapidly, Ayers dropped to the ground. McNally howled in pain as a second bullet from the rifle of the marksman in the brush scarred his cheek. The automatic was still barking as the big man turned and dashed madly across the clearing. Again the rifle boomed. McNally threw his hands above his head, stumbled, and then rolled over to remain there limp and motionless. Looks like we got him, said a voice, and a tall, well-built man walked into the clearing, a heavy rifle in his hand. That's the crawling creature, otherwise known as Bull Dill, the craziest killer that ever let loose. I know, said Ayers, and you're lucky McNally. Right. The real McNally looked at him in surprise. But how did you figure that out? I've heard about you, said Ayers. Finally remembered that they called you lucky because you hated hunches. This killer here said he was McNally, but he was talking about having hunches about something. You're right so far, McNally grinned. What else? And I had heard that one of the strange things about Lucky McNally was that he never cursed. This Dill had cursed plenty. Then I got to figuring things out. I knew that Dill had brought me back here for some reason. Then I remembered that when I first met him, I had told him the crawling creature had gotten the money that Dan Buckley and I had. He knew I was lying, for he'd learned somewhere that Dan Buckley and I had 10,000 between us. Yes, I knew that, said McNally. Early last night, this Dill found my camp. Planned to kill me just as he did your partner, but I got away. I had to move fast, though, and I had to leave my gun behind. I followed him, saw him murder Buckley, but I was unarmed and helpless, so I could do nothing then. "Why didn't you warn me later?" demanded Ayers. "I couldn't last night. After Dill left, he picked up my trail again. I spent the rest of the night ducking him. In the morning, I did follow you." McNally smiled grimly. "Both you and Dill took a shot at me back there on the trail. That was close. Later, I climbed up in that tree. I planned to slip a noose over Bull Dill's head, but it was dark. I couldn't see very well, and I got you instead." McNally looked at Ayers earnestly. "I'm sorry, old man. Right then was when I had certainly played into Dill's hands. He had you convinced that I was really the crawling creature, I'm sure." "But you hadn't any hunches about it," Ayers smiled. "I finally figured it out. That was why I was pretending to look for the place I had hidden the money belt. I knew that Dill was watching me. I wasn't surprised when you warned me from the brush. I thought you might be somewhere nearby. Sorry you had so much trouble digging up the grave to get Buckley's rifle, and then found it wasn't loaded." "Yes, that wasn't so good. You showed me a lot of sense when you tossed me those bullets as you were sitting there by the tree. If you hadn't, Dill might have gotten you." "I know that. Dill tried to bluff me into believing that you had done the shooting after he went into the jungle and took a shot at me. But I knew that Buckley's gun wasn't loaded, and I was almost positive that poor Dan didn't have any cartridges in his pockets, but I wasn't quite sure. When I saw that the grave had been refilled, I knew that whoever the crawling creature was absolutely insane." "You were right," said McNally, smiling. "And I haven't got a hunch about it."
That was The Crawling Creature by Donald Bain Hobart, narrated by Jeff Lewis. I like this story for three reasons. Firstly, I really enjoyed how the author crammed so much background into such a small space. Authors sometimes struggle packing a whole three-act narrative into a short story, and I think pulp writers like Hobart employed a solid solution, zooming in on just a fragment of a larger tale and giving the reader a flavour of that larger narrative through a single situation or sequence of events. The rest of our protagonist's African adventure is only hinted at, but we're given just enough background to provide context and motivation. Secondly, it employs a familiar pulp trope, the story is logic puzzle, where the reader is encouraged to try and put the pieces together before the protagonist does, in the tradition of a Hercule Poirot or Sherlock Holmes story. And finally, I like this story because it's just the sort of thing that I think would have appealed to my paternal grandfather, and he was a Donald too. I hope you enjoyed this particular adventure. If you did, please drop by the site at protectingprojectpulp.com and leave a comment on the episode post, or join the conversation in the District of Wonders forum, linked from the site. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the show via iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Just click the subscribe link. And please remember that the District of Wonders runs on your donations. There's no ads on the show or on the websites. Instead, our sites have big donate buttons and a big stack of hosting fees we need to pay. So please help out, and we can continue to bring you great fiction at the very reasonable price of free. Thanks for listening from everyone here at PPP. Our assistant editor Fred Heimbaugh, our sound engineer Tom O'Dwyer, our producer Tony C. Smith, and from me, your host, Simon Hildebrandt. We hope you'll join us next time for episode 37, where we'll bring you The Waters of Bowlegs Creek by J.E. Grinstead. So remember to always check the pockets for cartridges before you bury the body, and have a great week.
This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.